first, for some, organized religion has gotten a bad name because of things like sexual abuse in the Catholic Church, conflict over divisive social issues, and acts of terrorism and religious warfare. While surveys show that younger generations are drifting away from organized religion, our next guest says there are many things we encounter in day-to-day living that we may need religion to deal with. Stephen Asma is a professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in Mind, Science, and Culture at Columbia College, Chicago. His new book is Why We Need Religion. Stephen, welcome to Central Time.
Oh, thanks for having me.
Well, Stephen, I want to get a little bit about where you're coming from, because some people out there are listening now are people of faith and thinking, well, of course I need religion. Can you talk about where you're coming from as a philosophy professor and a bit of a skeptic yourself?
Yeah, I was raised religious and was a devout Christian, and then went away to college, and like a lot of people, sort of had a lapse in my faith, and I got a PhD in philosophy, and it seemed to me that I couldn't sort of commit to the religious ideas like I had before. They didn't seem as true, in the sense that they didn't seem like there was a proof for the claims of religion. And so this leads a lot of people, particularly there's a growing number of younger folks, the millennials, to mark themselves as nones, N-O-N-E-S, meaning they sort of reject traditional religious affiliation. They may be spiritual, or they may be, like myself, agnostic, but they no longer sort of subscribe to religion. And I looked around and I saw that the only people sort of talking about religion are either very devout believers or sort of the new atheists, who are extremely intense critics of religion, saying, you know, it's stupid, it's for stupid people, and it's ignorant. And I thought, you know, there's a huge middle ground that's missing here. All the people I know seem to be, you know, maybe we're somewhere on a continuum. We believe some things, we have questions, we have doubt, we have a mixture of belief and doubt. And so I wanted to write a book that was really about this large majority of us that are in the middle territory.
You focus a lot in the book on the function of religion, not so much as looking at claims to truth and whether things are right or wrong. And I want to quote here, you're talking about religion's main function, quote, is not a path to morality, nor can it substitute for a scientific understanding of nature. Its chief virtue is emotional management. Can you talk about religion and emotional management?
Yeah, I think I didn't quite appreciate this until I went and lived in the developing world. About 15 years ago, I lived in Cambodia. I've also lived in China and traveled a lot in Thailand, in Laos, and Vietnam. And I began to see that religion in these places is really about emotional management, a sort of therapy for our emotional lives. And I could see it clearly there because people are suffering greatly. You know, in Cambodia, you know, one out of every 10 people you see in downtown is missing a limb from, you know, a landmine accident. There's this tremendous suffering in the developing world. But I could see that there were places where science or medicine could not really help people with this suffering. But religion was extremely helpful in helping people keep their peace of mind, keep their optimism, keep hope, stay inspired, stay strong. So in the daily life of the average person, religion is extremely good at managing our emotions. And when I returned to the States, I began to see, oh, that's what it's doing here, too. It's not really just a developing world situation, but the Christianity, Judaism, and Islam that we're more familiar with here is also doing the same thing.
You look at neuroscience and evolution and make the case that our brains are wired, maybe not for a particular religion or even a kind of religion, but our brains are emotionally wired to be receptive to spirituality and religious belief. Can you spell out how that works?
Yeah, I did some work starting about 10 years ago on emotional neuroscience, which is basically studying not so much how we think, but how we feel. And neuroscientists disagree a little bit about the number here, but there's anywhere between 4 and 7 basic emotions. It's stuff we would all recognize. We all have fear. We all have lust and love, or care. People, you know, human beings and mammals generally have anger or rage. So there's this list of emotions, and these are in the deep old brain. This is part of being a mammal, and you see this in your dog, in rats and squirrels, in any kind of mammal. And this brain has been evolving for as long as 200 million years. Whereas the rational part of our brain is relatively recent. That's the neocortex, and it's what gives us rationality, and probably it's where a lot of our executive functions and cognitive thinking reside. But that's very recent. And the argument I'm making in the book is that religion is one of the earliest forms of culture that evolved, and it's very good at helping us with this emotional brain. And how we feel is as important to our survival as how we think.
And we discount that, you write. We may think we're more rational than we really are, not realizing that the emotions, even when we're thinking rationally, the emotion is still there as a guide.
Right. I think we have a distorted picture of our own rationality. We think we're always being rational and that the emotions maybe get in the way and contaminate our sort of logical calculations. But really, it's quite the opposite. Most of us are operating through our emotions. The emotions evolved as an adaptive strategy for our social world. Like we have to deal with people in our family on a daily basis. I mean, let's look at today. You had to get up and deal with members of your family, the social hierarchy at work. There's dominance, there's subordination. You've got to figure out who are your allies, who are your enemies. And so our emotions are very good at helping us navigate in this form of social intelligence. Along comes the rational brain, and it's very good at describing the world and giving us things like science. So I'm a huge fan of science, and I believe it's the proper way to describe and understand nature. But really, how many scientific problems did you solve this morning or today? Not too many. Same with me. But I've had to solve many social problems or challenges, and the emotions are very good at helping us there. And I think religion steps in when the emotions have, we can be overwhelmed by emotions, like in cases of grief or fear or anger.
Talking to Stephen Asmund, professor of philosophy at Columbia College Chicago, talking about his new book, Why We Need Religion. So we've got this strong emotional grounding in our brains, in our evolution. Stephen, how does religion help us to manage extreme emotion in particular, grief, fear, anger?
Yeah. Grief, as we all know, can be very debilitating. I was lecturing a group on the East Coast, and afterwards a student came up to me and said that, and he was a young man, he was like, I don't know, 19 or 20, and he said that a few years before that, about 5 or 6 years before that, his family had suffered a terrible tragedy. His brother had actually been stabbed to death by a perpetrator who escaped and was never found. And this was a family of just three kids and a single mother raising them. And what happened was that as the student explained to me, his mother went into such a deep despair and depression, as you can imagine, that she became utterly debilitated by it and could not function. And it was only through a kind of what we would call magical thinking, religious imagination, and also the sort of rituals and practices of her religious community that slowly brought her back, got her on her feet, and helped her to restore her with the hope and the desire to see her murdered son again in the afterlife. Now, you know, a skeptic or one of these sort of new atheists might look at that and say, well, that's wishful thinking. But look at the power of that wishful thinking. She was able to then take care of the rest of her kids and get through life. And it in some sense is a kind of religion provides us with some of these reset buttons for handling and then getting back into the social world and surviving.
Yeah, that's seems to be a recurring theme in your book. It would be easy to argue there is an afterlife. There isn't an afterlife. This particular belief is right. This particular belief is wrong. You seem to be making the case, who cares? Let's see what it does for us in our daily lives.
Yeah, I guess that's fairly controversial because we like to think, you know, we have some kind of responsibility to the truth. And ordinarily, I would say, yes, we do. But there's a range of beliefs where the evidence is not clear one way or the other. And in those cases, I follow sort of the American pragmatist philosopher William James, who said, live and let live. If it helps you to believe in this thing and it has palpable benefits to you, then there's no reason why you shouldn't. I think what the atheist and the skeptic is worried about is they're desperately afraid they're going to believe in something that turns out to be false. You know, they don't want to be duped. They don't want to end up looking like a boob somehow. But that's also a kind of emotional anxiety or fear. And William James said, you know, they're working from their own emotional palette, and they should be more charitable towards people with different beliefs.
We're talking to Stephen Asma, professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in mind, science, and culture at Columbia College in Chicago. We're talking about his new book. It's called Why We Need Religion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you consider yourself religious or spiritual? And does your religion help you to manage your emotions? Things like anger, fear, and grief. Does it provide you with a sense of community and support? If you do not consider yourself religious, do you do these things in other ways? Have you found other ways to deal with issues like grief in your life? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or email ideas at WPR.org. We'll pick up a conversation, maybe hear from you, coming up on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time. I'm Rob Ferret. We continue the conversation with Stephen Asma, professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in mind, science, and culture at Columbia College Chicago. His new book is Why We Need Religion. You can join in at 800-642-1234. Do you find, if you're a person of faith, that your faith helps you deal with issues like grief and other strong emotional situations in your everyday life? Is that an important part of your religion, or is that just a side benefit of your belief? If you are not religious yourself, what do you think of our guest's argument? Call 800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234, or tweet us at Central Time WPR. We'll go to our callers now. David is with us in Clam Lake. David, hi.
Hey, hi. Hey, good afternoon. Stephen, I wanted to ask you, if across the ages of modern humans, do you think that there is a dynamic going on between, you know, this want of individuality in all of us and uniqueness compared to participation in community and you know, social things and the society benefit that religion brings? And in fact, there's also this idea that, well, I want to be my own person. I don't want to go along with a group. And is there a push-pull with this? And has that been a developmental feature of the human race?
David, thanks. Stephen, what do you think?
Yeah, that's a great question. I've had some experience culturally, you know, cross-culturally myself, having lived in, obviously, the U.S. For most of my life, but also spent time in China, and I even have a Chinese family. There in Asia, you know, the stereotype is sort of true that there's a little more emphasis on the community or the group rather than the individual. And the stereotype of the Westerner is that there's a more of a celebration of the individual. You know, just like some other stereotypes, there's some truth in this in my own experience. And you can see it in the religions. Buddhism, for example, very much celebrates the group rather than the individual. I would say that Western religions are more about individual salvation, although obviously compassion and help towards others is key to the virtues. But I think this is true in terms of the evolution of our species as well, that how do we come into the world? Do we come in as selfish individuals and then we have to learn through religion to share and cooperate with each other? Or there's a debate, some other biologists say we come into the world already connected with others, like our mother, for example, through oxytocin and internal opioids and natural brain processes of bonding. And then slowly we emerge as individuals from this family unit. So I do think the caller's right, David's right. There's always been a sort of push and pull between stressing the individual and the community. And religion is really good at helping steer us toward the one we need at any given time. It sort of adapts to the times.
Thanks a lot for that call, David. You mentioned at the outset, Stephen, that there's, you know, two sides most vocal about issues of religion, the most devout and the most devoutly atheistic, if I can use that phrase. And it seems like they're not going to be neither side's going to be happy with what you're saying, because on the skeptic atheist side, they'll say, wait, you're telling me I have to pretend to be religious to get these benefits. On the devout side, saying, wait, I don't do this for the function. I actually believe in a set of very specific religious things here.
Right. No, that's true. And I think both those groups don't like my book, although many of them have not taken the time to see what the argument is, because just like in the political landscape, the people who get voice are the people on the extremes. The extreme right and the extreme left are oftentimes very vocal and they make good TV. And as a result of it, it gives one the impression that there's some you know, that we're basically a battle of extreme positions. If you were living in Asia, for example, and looked at the news on Christianity, you'd see like a lot of coverage of the Westboro Baptist Church, which is, as many of the listeners know, is a very sort of a hate group, Christian hate group in Kansas. And there's only like 50 members of this church. And if that was your picture of Christianity, you'd have a very skewed and very strange view of it. I think that the vast majority of people are in this middle territory, and they have beliefs, but they also are not extreme or fanatical in them. They take them and they use them and they sort of adapt them. And this is the sort of group that I'm trying to speak for and speak to. And I think I've received a tremendous amount of good feedback from people since the book was published a couple of weeks ago.
I want to go back to our callers now. We have Kathy with us in Winthrop Harbor, Illinois. Kathy, hi.
Hi. How are you?
Good. What did you want to bring up?
Good. Well, as I was waiting, just what your caller said, and forgive me, I've forgotten his name, but just what you said is exactly what I am, and you are speaking to me, and I will be getting your book, because at 56 going on 57, I find myself in quite a quandary as to, I don't know who I am, why I'm here, what do I, you know, and I was raised in a very, very structured religion most of my life. And I find it abhorrent. I find the word religion abhorrent, which is why I'm intrigued by you using the word religion. Because to me, and it's my opinion, that is religion is a structured environment that is, it's black and white. It's all or nothing. And it's, to me, offensive, because in that religion I was in, I believed in that. You know, you follow what you're told to do, you do what you're supposed to do, and then find out that they're living a double life. The ones that are getting up on the pulpit of the stage are living a double life, oftentimes, or are very hypocritical. And I find that extremely offensive. I find myself being someone who is open to diversity, open to listening to other people's point of views, and, as you said, molding them to what fits for me, what feels right to me.
Kathy, thanks a lot for that call. And yeah, let's talk about that word religion. When you're talking about these emotional benefits of religion, Stephen, are you talking about religion as Kathy is describing it with that formalized structure? Or could it be, a lot of people make that distinction between religion and a more individual spirituality, which I think is where Kathy was going there.
Yeah, I'm a, you know, a big fan of that movement, and I think many people are sort of fashioning their spiritual practices and beliefs outside of, you know, the constraints of what you know, Kathy was pointing out is very hypocritical institutions of religion. However, the downside of that, I think, is that oftentimes, you know, I teach college students and I ask them, because they're the millennials coming up now, you know, and they're very spiritual, but they're against religion for all the reasons Kathy was talking about. And yet they, what they're doing is engaging in the magical thinking of spirituality. But what they lack is the sort of social connection that traditional religion has provided. Like, if you think about the religion of your parents and your grandparents, for all of its flaws, you still got together once or twice or maybe a few times a week, and you spent time singing together, religious festivals, shaking hands, even embracing. There's grieving customs, there's sacrifice, there's dance, there's, you know, all of the sort of practices. And what I think religion provides that spirituality lacks, at least in its current formulation, is this social bonding. And that social bonding is absolutely crucial for happiness. Lots of psychological studies are suggesting that the key ingredient in the happy life, the long happy life, is social connection. And we're living in a society where more and more people are going, you know, buying a spirituality app for their phone and sitting in their room and sort of meditating. Well, that's great, but also one needs that sort of social interaction that that traditional religion provides too.
Kathy, thanks for the call. We'll go next to Phyllis with us in Greenwood. Phyllis, hi.
Hi. Yes, my question is this. Early on, we started out spiritual, and if this is a process of evolution and we've become more rational, then can we assume that ultimately we will move towards greater rationality?
Interesting. That emotional side may be less important in evolution than our rational one over the long haul, Stephen.
Yeah, I think the traditional functions of religion would have included things like explaining nature, and we no longer need religion to tell us how the universe got here or how it works. Science has taken over that job quite well. And also, I don't think we need religion to tell us how to sort of be ethical with each other, because our rationality is also pretty good on that front. But I do think there are forms of suffering that happen to us even in our scientific age, for which there is no scientific alleviation. You can lose your loved one. I mean, a parent loses a child. What in rationale, in the rational life or in the scientific life, is going to come to the rescue of such despair? It's not impossible. I mean, there are individuals that can rally back, and there's no doubt about that, and more power to you. But religion is a cultural system that helps you get through that and think about it in a way that makes it meaningful and gets you back in the game of life. And so in that sense, I think those aspects of religion are not going away.
Very briefly, Stephen, and it's a big question, can we get those things you're talking about in an organized way without a metaphysical belief?
I think we can, and that's one of the arguments I'm making in the book, is the metaphysical belief is helpful for sure, but engaging in the practices, the rituals, the life of religion gives you many of those emotional benefits, even if you don't share some of the magical thinking.
We'll leave it there, Stephen. Thanks a lot for joining us today.
It was a pleasure. Thank you.
That's Stephen Asma. He's a professor of philosophy and founding fellow of the research group in mind, science, and culture at Columbia College in Chicago. He joined us to talk about his new book. It's called Why We Need Religion. You can still share your thoughts, your responses. You can email ideas@WPR.org, or you can always join the conversation on Twitter. Tweet us @CentralTimeWPR. Let us know what your reaction is to our guest's argument.